microphones.
How are you?
All right. Greetings. Welcome, everyone, to the Committee on Transportation on Tuesday, January 27th. Today, we're going to hear presentations on a couple of reports, take a little bit of testimony, and have some discussion. First, we're going to hear from the County Transit Improvement Board, Peter McLaughlin, and as you know, this is the newly created entity that oversees and administers the quarter cent sales tax for transitways in the metropolitan area, and we're very interested in what's been going on for the last 8 months or so with that. And then we're going to hear the Metropolitan Council's 2030 transportation plan, a plan that was recently adopted after, I think, over a year of draft and process. It was adopted just a couple of weeks ago, and we're interested to hear what those policies call for in terms of our transportation vision for the metropolitan area for the coming years. And then we'll hear from the public, and then we'll have some opportunity for some interaction. So with that, we have Peter McLaughlin, who chairs the County Transportation Improvement Board. Commissioner McLaughlin does have to get back to a county board meeting, and so I think he has some views of the 2030 plan, so we'll hear a little bit about that, too, before he departs for his county commission meeting this afternoon. Welcome, Commissioner McLaughlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to be here, and I appreciate the accommodation of my schedule. We start at 1:30 with our regular board meeting. My name is Peter McLaughlin. I am the chair of the county's Transit Improvement Board, and I'm making comments officially on behalf of the county's Transit Improvement Board today. I'm also chair of the Hennepin County Regional Railroad Authority. We are here today to report on the activities of the county's Transit Improvement Board since the enactment of last year's history-making transportation bill in late February. We are, pursuant to that bill, we are making an official report, a copy of which you have in your packets, an official report as required by statute of our activities. It's an annual report to the legislature, and that will summarize all the things that we have done. I think, in summary, the county's Transit Improvement Board, I think, has made great progress in the last 9 months. And we have done what the legislature asked us to do, to speed up investment in transit and create a vision for transit and a structure for investing in transit that will keep our economy strong and keep this this region moving forward. We spent most of our time this year, Mr. Chairman and members, creating the county's Transit Improvement Board. We had direction from the legislature, from the legislation. And then we had a blank piece of paper, and we took that direction. First meeting we had, there were over 85 people in the room as we tried to create a joint powers agreement, get agreement on imposing a sales tax, and then starting to move forward on how we were going to invest the sales tax money if we put it in place. Not an easy task, but we did our best, and I think we did a very good job in balancing the interests across the region. And those interests, we have east-west interests that need to be balanced, big and small county interests that had to be balanced, counties that were ready to go with projects and counties that weren't. And we created a mechanism for voting that provides some balance and some guarantees in both directions so that the bigger counties are protected and the smaller counties are protected. There needs to be a supermajority for votes on anything. To pass the agenda, we need to have a supermajority, and we need a three-quarters vote. Three-quarters of all the votes have to vote if there's going to be a commitment of capital that is in excess of $100 million and for a time period in excess of 5 years. And so, again, we wanted to make sure that all counties could have their voice heard, and I think we've created a mechanism that does that. We also provided a minimum guarantee so that the smaller counties would, by virtue of the joint powers agreement, would actually receive a guarantee of funding. We also passed in the joint powers agreement that we would seek geographic equity over time. We're a regional body, 5 counties, and we wanted to make sure that geographic equity was achieved over time through our investment decisions. We also wanted to maximize federal funding. That's a goal that the legislature set, and we embedded that in our founding documents. So having created this structure, Mr. Chairman, and having voted, five county boards voted to put a sales tax in place. It was, the collections began on July 1st. And I think it's fair to say that we've had virtually, there have been unanimous votes on virtually every issue of substance that's come before this board. There have been some procedural things and other things that have not been. Hasn't been without bumps, but we've been working those through, and we continue to be an organization that I think is fulfilling the directive of the legislature and the vision that this legislature provided. We've taken a conservative approach to financing, Mr. Chairman, funding time-sensitive projects only in our first round of grants, the Fridley Station on the North Star Corridor, the Apple Valley Park and Ride on the Cedar Avenue Busway, and the Central Corridor, all of which needed funding infused last year so that they could continue to make progress. And in the case of the North Star and 35 or Cedar Avenue Busway, these improvements are actually going to be able to be opened. The Fridley Station and the Apple Valley Park and Ride can open when those facilities open late this year. We provided operating funding for Hiawatha, North Star, 35W, and Cedar Avenue Busway so that those could continue to operate or start to operate, as the case may be. We made an up to $300 million commitment to the Central Corridor out of the sales tax. Our first big capital commitment was $300 million for Central Corridor, which will represent 30% of the total funding of that project. And we made that commitment, and that commitment could then be reflected in our federal application for going into final design. That's going to help us as we compete for federal funds, which are going to comprise 50% of the total funding for this project. So it made us better able to compete for federal money. We also made an operating grant for Forest Lake Lines in Washington County coming into Ramsey County, into Hennepin County, and we provided for alternatives analysis funding for the I-94 East Corridor in excess of $550,000 so that planning for that important corridor could go forward. Our financial plan has been to use cash now as long as we could, get a track record, and then get our priorities, our long-term priorities clear if we're going to start to be borrowing money in the future. But we're trying to use cash now, and that's what we've done so far. We left room in our grants this year to accommodate an economic slowdown, which unfortunately has been even worse than we had anticipated, but we still have a cushion within our funding so that we're going to be able to live up to all of our, we will be living up to all of our funding commitments that have been made so far. And we are now in the process of developing a long-range financial plan, which is going to be the framework for our long-term investment. And there's been extensive discussion of finding a way to accommodate Washington County and the fact that they're not quite as far along in the process as some of the other counties, and make sure that we can do that on an ongoing basis beyond the three-year commitment that we made in the Joint Powers Agreement. We took a conservative approach to operation of CTIB as well, the County's Transit Improvement Board. We said last year in our testimony it was going to be lean and mean. We weren't going to set up an operating entity. We've kept that promise. We don't have a permanent staff. We haven't leased office space. We're using professional consultation plus the county rail authority staffs working in conjunction with one another to get this work done. We've tried as well to create clean lines of responsibility between the County's Transit Improvement Board and the responsibilities of the Met Council, the individual rail authorities, and the state. Again, this is all, we're making this up as we go along, and that's what we've devoted our time to. But we've tried to make sure that the direction of the legislature, the founding principle for the County's Transit Improvement Board that you gave to us, was get a source of funding that can make long-term investments. And we've been trying to protect that corpus of funds that the sales tax is generating so that we can, in fact, improve the transit system in the years ahead. We have also, the County's Transit Improvement Board, also took on the lead in what we call an effort to speed up the investment in transit. And this is going to segue a little bit, Mr. Chairman, into my comments on the Met Council's 2030 plan. The demand for investment in these transit corridors is out there. Any of you who have been around the metro area know that it's out there. People have seen how Hiawatha has worked. They see North Star coming, and they see Central coming, and they want their part of the region to be included. And so We think that the largely linear approach that's been taken thus far, with some exceptions, but essentially one big project at a time, we need to try to modify that. And we brought together experts from other regions around the country, Denver and Dallas and Salt Lake City, to talk to us about how they've pursued multiple corridors simultaneously. I think the results of that conference, are worth sharing here today, and we're going to take them into account as we develop our long-range financial plan. The observation from these folks from these other regions is that we have not been making maximum use or incorporating other pots of federal money as well as we could have. The formula funds that the federal government provides, for example, the Small Starts money, another federal program, very small starts, those are all potential sources of money that really have not been used as aggressively in pursuing the vision for transit investment in this region as they might be, according to the people we brought in from the outside. And I think that's something that needs to be looked at by us, but also by the Metropolitan Council in their long-range activities.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner McLaughlin, could you just amplify a little bit of small starts and real small starts, what that is?
That would be very useful. Thanks for asking that question. The FTA has, kind of programs,
yeah.
That come out of its authorizing legislation. They get programmed for states. We learned a lot last Friday about what those are and how well we take advantage of them, so that would be useful. Commissioner McLaughlin.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, if you think about the new starts projects, we did Hiawatha. That was about $745 million project. North Star is going to be a $350 million project approximately, and Central will be $915 million. Those are new starts. Those are the big projects. They have two different categories, small starts and very small starts for projects, and you shouldn't rely on my recitation of chapter and verse on just what the dollar numbers are, but it's on the order of $50 million and $25 million maximums for those.
So it's based on money.
It's based on money, right. But they would be very appropriate for some of the BRT lines that Met Council has identified, bus rapid transit lines.
And expressways,
right. Mm-hmm. And so those are the kind of things that we need to be trying to optimize, because it's federal money that's going to be spent somewhere in the United States. We've been, in recent years, good at getting the new starts money, but we need to be working on
I-94, Senator Salzman springs to mind.
Right. So those are the kinds of projects that could be funded, and we need to make sure that those are integrated. There are various options at the federal level. There are also some new rail options, passenger rail options, that Congress created last year, and we're just learning what the implications of those projects might be, those programs might be. But again, we should be trying to take advantage of those in an integrated approach to funding our transit vision here in this region. They also observed that the use of the transit taxing district revenues, which have only grown 1% per year over like the last 5 years, that's worth looking at as well in terms of targeting additional investment to expand the system. They also observed that we've been relying on two measures primarily in this region. One is the doubling of ridership, 50% increase by 2020 and a doubling by 2030. And the cost effectiveness index, which is the measure imposed by the federal government to measure the measure of time savings per dollar spent on these transit projects. Their observation was that those are probably not broad enough to reflect the interests of this region or any region in the country in terms of where and how much investment ought to be made. It's not to say that they're not appropriate measures, but they ought not to be relied upon as heavily as we have in this region. And they suggested some additional measures, some of which are included in federal statute and have frankly been underutilized by the Federal Transit Administration, including land use, economic growth, environmental effects, and long-term sustainability. So those are just some of the measures, and those are measures that in a message from Congressman Oberstar, that we received at this Speed Up conference, he indicated that those are going to have more weight in the evaluation of projects as time goes forward. So we need to be reflecting those in our measurement as well. So, Mr. Chairman, I think in terms of speeding it up, I don't think there was any silver bullet identified, but we need to be approaching this, one, with a strong vision, and two, trying to be smart and agile in seeking out sources of funding that are available here under our discretion, but also at the federal level as well. And then finally, Mr. Chairman, if I could pause there, or I could just make a few other comments on the 2030 plan. What's your pleasure?
I'll let you pick. But my question, or what I'd like to hear a little bit from you, a little bit of a report from the experience of Denver and Salt Lake City, as reflected, of course, in the bill that we passed last year, which asks Met Council to look at packaging up a number of lines and presenting them as a single proposal, if you will, to the FTA. So at some point, that was very interesting, how they approached that question in Denver and Salt Lake City. If you could reflect a little bit on that, either now or after your comments.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, that actually was the basis of my comments on the 2030 plan.
Okay, all right.
We didn't talk about this ahead of time. But, again, no silver bullets on this thing. But I think they were clear. You need a strong vision in the region and one that people are united around. And they were clear that you need unity in the region if you're going to succeed in competing for federal funds. And that, frankly, is the same message that I have received and the other county commissioners who have been involved in this discussion with our congressional delegation over the last 15 years. Congressman Sabo, his message, he gave it to me very clearly and succinctly, as was his way, which was, Peter, make sure that you've got your ducks in line back home and keep them in line, and then we'll do the best that we can here in Washington to fund the projects that you're united around. And they don't want to referee fights back here. And so that was the message we received from the Salt Lake City folks and the other places around the country that we heard from. So with the idea then of creating a program of projects, not just one line, but a program of projects, I finished up the meeting the other day suggesting that we kind of had that when we agreed on the Hiawatha as the first LRT line in 1998. The agreement was made among the counties. The legislature embraced it, and Governor Carlson embraced it. At that time, there was a commitment to a line between Minneapolis and St. Paul and the North Star Corridor. The line between Minneapolis and St. Paul has since evolved from the Riverview Corridor to Central Corridor. But those were the three corridors that were part of the original program. Red Rock was added congressionally within a year and a half of that. But we actually had a program of projects that we had adopted as counties. The legislature had embraced it, and so we pursued it. And there were other projects that were kind of percolating underneath that. But those were the first three, and those are the first three projects that are going to be done. Hiawatha completed, North Star opening this fall, and then Central on its way to a 2014 opening. So we have some experience. We didn't talk about it as much as a formal program of projects, which is what Salt Lake City, what Phoenix, and some of these other areas have done. And so they recommended very strongly that we come up with this package, and their observation in the meeting of staff people was that it was interesting that the legislature actually was providing direction on that and that the MPO had not done that and hadn't taken that aggressive a stance. And so I think that's a lesson that we need to look very closely at. The legislature's been very aggressive in pushing forward a vision for how we can move forward, and the counties have been, and we just need to make sure that we get a strong and willing partner with the Met Council. And the 2030 plan goes a long way toward that, but it does suffer. I think the plan suffers, again, from a lack of utilization of some of these revenue sources that I discussed earlier, small starts, very small starts, formula funds from the federal government, and the transit taxing district revenues. They also assume in that report, as I understand it, that the we're going to receive about the same amount of money in new starts as we've received in the last few years. I think there's reason to think, and our experts from out of town suggested that there was reasonable reason to think, that there might be some increase in the amount of new starts money, which is the fundamental building block that we were, are planning to use for 50% of the cost of all of these lines. And Congressman Oberstar has been very, very clear. Infrastructure investment's been very clear priority for the Obama administration. The statements have been coming out, and the new authorization bill is coming in. Okay. So I think there's we could be a little more aggressive on that.
We have a question from Senator Saltzman.
Yes, a question and perhaps comment, Mr. Chair. First of all, I want to thank you, Commissioner, for putting together Friday's Transit Way Conference. It was extremely interesting, and I think seeing, again, it brought together our region and seeing all the people hearing the same thing, and I was very encouraged by hearing how in Salt Lake City particularly, did they do like 70 miles of transit ways within 10 or 15 years?
I can't quote you the number.
It was something,
off the top, but it was
but it was
number,
a significant
yes.
number that it really was a challenge to us that this can be done. And looking at the different pots of federal dollars was extremely interesting, especially when we hear that here in Minnesota we're like 46th out of 50th in getting federal money overall, looking at some of those options. I also want to thank you because I know we've had spirited discussions over the past 6 months about really trying to assist Washington County to catch up. And we will work on our end. I know that many of us are working to really do what we can to catch up, but we also need a hand extended to us, and you have done that in some of these most recent proposals. So thank you, and then also just to know, I hope we will continue on that track because I think that's very important that we absolutely have to move forward as a region in a very balanced way. And so I appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltzman, thank you very, very much for those comments. We will continue to work on that, and I think the conference was a good additional step here, the next step along the way to trying to build that regional agreement. And I know, again, our congressional delegation is looking for that from us, and I think we can do it. I just think we need to, you know, people need to roll up their sleeves and make these things happen, and that's what we're committed to doing. Thank you.
One idea, Senator Saltzman, that came to that was that another region is doing as they were trying to create their regional by I think it was Salt Lake City because that's a very kind of very long like 100-mile long metropolitan area. I didn't actually know that, so you can imagine a lot of things going on in a 100-mile stretch and to create the regional center of gravity, the regional push, people are really interested in making sure that all parts of the region were treated equitably. And so they've come up with a way of reporting annually on equity. And sometimes, as we've discussed, you know, can't measure it on a year-to-year basis, but, you know, making sure that over time there is equity in all areas are going to be served by a regional effort. So that's a good idea, and I think we should talk more about it.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. I would look forward to that.
So, Commissioner McLaughlin, you're still talking about the 2030 plan. I didn't mean
well,
to.
Well, only, Mr. Chairman, the only things that I would add would be that this notion of creating a program of projects, I think that is the right direction to go, and that we need to have the MPO incorporating that. They need to be more aggressive about these other sources of funds, and then move forward on this. Now is a moment to be bold. We have an opportunity here with Congressman Oberstar and the reauthorization bill. We have an opportunity. We should not squander it. These investments are fundamental to the long-term economic health of the region and the state. That's why I've been involved in this for a number of years since my time as a member of the House. This is a moment to be bold, and we hope that the Met Council can embrace this idea of being bold and moving this forward. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner. I understand you have to go soon, but let's pause for some questions if you have some time.
Sure.
Great. Any questions for Commissioner McLaughlin, Chair of CTIP? No? Looks like you satisfied us.
Mr. Chairman, my last comment would be only thank you to the legislature for trusting the counties to actually do this. There were some doubters in the state, I know that, but You trusted us to put this thing together, and I appreciate that. And I want to say publicly on behalf of the County Strands and Improvement Board that we thank you for that trust, and we will continue to try to live up to it. Thank you.
So I do have a question. So Carver County and Scott County sit at the table in an ex officio capacity. Are we ever going to get them in?
Well,
are you going to see the value in participating regionally?
They were among the 85 people at that first 85 plus people at the first meeting. That Carver and Scott were representative. They represented. They participated in all the discussions on the creation of the Joint Powers Agreement. I think they went back to their boards though, and they did not feel that they were ready to impose a sales tax of a quarter cent for transit purposes. In some instances, I think there were ideological problems with it. In other cases, I think that some of the other members thought maybe they didn't have projects that were ripe enough to go forward. Mm-hmm. By our invitation from the five member counties who did join, we invited them to sit, and they have been participating on a regular basis in the meetings as a non-voting member, but they are participating, and so we have the benefit of their comments, and they understand the directions in which we're going by through their participation. So I think that's the short-term solution. They're going to have to make a decision long-term about, depending on how their projects are evolving, about whether they want to join them.
Well, maybe if we go to a half cent, flex some of those dollars in ways that they see useful. I'm just thinking out loud. I don't know. Okay. All right. Senator Stephen.
Thank you, Chairman Dibble and Commissioner. Thank you for being here. And I was trying to just ask staff. I don't think it was included in the legislation, but we were interested when it was established of trying to ensure that CTIB could spend money within the region on high-speed rail projects if the board found that to be appropriate. I don't think that legislation was included in the legislation. Judd's nodding his head that that's correct. But so keeping that in mind, I'm just curious what conversations, if any, the CTIB has had regarding high-speed rail, recognizing the importance of connecting the Twin Cities to Chicago and to the high-speed rail network, especially given the increase in the authorization money that Amtrak has received and the money that will potentially be in the stimulus package.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stephen, this actually has been discussed. At this point, the position of the board is that high-speed rail from Chicago is akin to the interstate highway system, that they're analogous. And there was no local investment in the interstate system. And so at this point, the thinking has been that CTIB ought not be investing in high-speed rail, but that's an obligation of the Department of Transportation in the state of Minnesota. That's been where it's been in other states. It hasn't been local governments investing. Having said that, we have, in our comments to the Metropolitan Council on their original version of their 2030 plan, we made an explicit link between Red Rock and high-speed rail because the investments that are going to be made there in the high-speed rail will help advance the Red Rock. And we would reserve our investments in that corridor to the Red Rock. But that's been the discussion so far. And the concern is that there's a long line of investments in commuter rail, light rail, and bus rapid transit that's already been identified, that it's more appropriate to be using state funds for the whatever the non-federal share of this would be rather than the local property, local sales tax. I'm sorry.
Right. Thank you. Mr. Chair, and just to follow up on that that's pretty consistent with my understanding of the way that what's appropriate for CTIB too. I just want for other members to understand that MnDOT is right now updating their state rail plan. They say they'll be done at the end of calendar year 2009. We're encouraging them to push that up, especially for high-speed rails that were able to better leverage some federal money that could be coming on high-speed rail. And we certainly also, at least I'd like to hear more from the Met Council in their 2030 plan about more ideas they have for high-speed rail being included in their updated version. I know that they do now reference it, but it'd be nice. It just doesn't, it seems like to the public, my understanding is that all of these organizations should be working together towards the common goal, and maybe that will happen once the state rail plan is completed, but it's just frustrating as a policymaker that it's taken so long for this plan to be completed.
Mr. Chairman,
Commissioner.
Senator Seidman, counties have shared your frustration about MnDOT's not being more forthcoming. I think that's changed in recent months. They are looking very closely at the high-speed rail, as you know, and I think that's a great step forward. And so we're going to continue. We've advocated for the high-speed rail for several years now. We're going to continue to do that, and a number of county officials are participating on the passenger rail study advisory group. We're going to continue to do that. We look forward to working with you as well. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Members, any more questions for Commissioner McGlaughlin? I just want to say for my part, thank you as well. It was a big task that we handed you. I think the counties all came together admirably. You know, I think the reason the CTIP was created was, you know, to reflect what had been reality for some time, and that's the work of the regional rail authorities, the counties, the other local officials. You know, we have municipal officials that are also participating, creating the excitement on the ground around a specific facility, but also stitching together how that all fits together and serves the region. Certainly there's been some anxiety on regional equity, and we're working through that. I see that you're going to be developing the long-term investment plan through the remainder of this year, and so we look forward to hearing more about that and regular contact as that framework comes together. Our offices, of course, are always available to you as we work through that discussion. Senator Saltzman will be present. Senator Seidman will be present, and we'll all be available to you. And maybe we can have an opportunity to get together over a cup of coffee later this year, later in the summer or fall, to hear more about how that's coming along.
Fabulous.
All right.
I'd be delighted. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. 2030 plan, Metropolitan Council. We have Judge Shetnin and Amy Venowitz here to tell us what the Met Council adopted a couple weeks ago. Oh, and Arlene McCarthy.
Thank you, Mr.
Arlene McCarthy and Judge Shetnin, and yep. Amy Venowitz is available in the audience, should we need her. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, my name is Judge Shetnin. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. I'm here on behalf of our Chair, Peter Bell. Peter is over at the Revenue Building with the Governor as he makes his budget recommendations, and he will be hopefully joining us here shortly. I know Ms. McCarthy plans on walking through the policy plan, and when Peter arrives, he will have a few comments about the economic stimulus package. That's
all
being,
the media is here, though. Why is he over there?
did he just show up?
No. I was saying,
oh, no,
I don't know why he's over there. All the TV cameras are over here.
Yeah. Well,
this is where the action is in the Capitol today.
Well, Mr. Chair, no disrespect, he was asked to be over there, and I think he was going to follow through on that request. But he will be here to make a few comments about the economic stimulus package. But with that, I will turn the PowerPoint on here, and we'll let Arlene go ahead and take a shot at it.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Chair and committee members. Again, Arlene McCarthy, Director of Transportation Services at Met Council. Thank you for the opportunity to share with you our transportation policy plan. It's a lot of work, and it also has a work plan that says we will do a lot more work in the next coming year. And so, thanks, Judge. Basically, to give you the higher overview here, it's important to know that our policy plan has all modes in the region, and that means highways, transit, freight, bike, airports, and pedestrians. We get a lot of federal money in this region, and it's really, we have to have this plan. We must update it every 4 years in order to receive all that federal money that we get. So it's a very important document. And as the MPO, or Metropolitan Planning's organization, the council does that. We don't do this in isolation. We do this with a tremendous amount of working with our partners, MnDOT, MAC, the Transportation Advisory Board, our TAB, and its technical committees, and quite a few task forces. And then there's significant public outreach also, working very closely with the counties and other groups that are established. We need to do this, as I said, to meet federal requirements. It also gives us an opportunity to reflect what has happened in the last 4 years and, quite frankly, new funding sources that have been identified in the last 4 years. For example, with this plan, we were able to reflect the change with the constitutional amendment passed in 2006. The UPA was a significant infusion of federal dollars that we won in this region competitively last year, $133 million in federal dollars. That we got on a very short time frame, and then, of course, the quarter-cent sales tax being administered by CTIB that you just heard about. So really, it is important that we update the plan because things do get accomplished. One thing that is very important and, quite frankly, causes a little bit of consternation out there with some of our stakeholders is that it is a federal requirement that our plan be fiscally constrained. That means we must reasonably identify the funding sources that we think we will have in the future based on some past practice and what we would anticipate. And we make those assumptions, and then in the plan we can state what we can fund. We cannot say we will fund projects above and beyond those anticipated levels. There is estimating involved in anticipating these funding sources. MnDOT does the highway funding, and the Met Council estimates transit funding.
Ms. Could I ask a question about the definition of fiscally constrained and
yes.
how we deal with that? I understand that that's been around for a while, and it's there's a good reason. It's very sound. It's very valid.
Mm-hmm.
And this is our policy plan, so it's our guiding document. But is there, I know in the past there's been a more, kind of a different, there was some reasonable expectation that there would be policy changes in the future, and the past plans, and those actually happened, and the plans of that time reflected that, and that was good because then we were able to proceed fairly efficiently on to the kinds of facilities and services that those new policies and those new sources could support. You heard Commissioner McLaughlin's comments, about some of the FTA observations from this past week, as well as this idea that perhaps we could. Is there ability within the plan to create an if-then sort of a rather than just confine ourselves to a fairly narrowly construed definition of fiscally constrained, we can say if we apply for and receive more new starts, if, in fact, someone like, Congressman Orbistar is able to do a surface transportation reauthorization that would allow Minnesota to move forward with a bigger plan than this proceeds. And do we have that ability to do that in a plan, create a different scenarios?
Yes, Chair Dibble, yes, we can, as long as we define what the fiscally constrained plan is.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fair to say in this plan, for example, on some bus service improvements, we identify a pretty broad range of the base bus system, and in order to implement all of that, we would need additional funding. On the transitways, for example, we identify transit ways to be studied, but until we know the results of the study, it's hard to know what mode and alignment would be recommended, what solution would be recommended for individual corridors. So we do have a plan on corridors to be studied, and then we have a financial plan that is more generic that says with the assumed funding, we could afford this, and I will get to that in this plan. So you could argue with the amount of studies we have recommended, if they all come to fruition, there could be more in the plan than we even say we can fund. On the road side, we did try to be very flexible with the anticipation of economic recovery funds. We did, at the end, incorporate into the plan that we could use some highway funds, for example, for some road expansions that would not have previously been allowed. So that flexibility was incorporated, quite frankly, at the last minute into our plan to be ready for the possibility of economic recovery funds.
Okay, thank you. Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McCarthy, could you talk about the MnDOT rail planning that's going on right now? I understand that they've been meeting and planning, and what is the relationship between you and that process, and where is the legislator involvement in that process?
Chair and Senator Bonhoeffer, are you talking about the statewide rail plan? Okay. Yes, MnDOT is underway. I believe they anticipate to have a consultant on board in a month or so to do the statewide rail plan. This would be both freight and passenger rail, and they need to do a new plan to be consistent with current federal requirements. And so, again, it's a statewide plan. What we have in our policy plan, we recognize that MnDOT is the lead on a state rail, both passenger and freight. However, usually the metropolitan area is a pretty significant component, a major destination, so to speak, in planning any rail system. So we definitely know that the Met Council is a very important partner with MnDOT in that type of planning. So we are on their team working with them. We also state in the work plan, this transportation policy plan that the council adopted in January has an attachment that is a work plan, a pretty long list of things, and one of those is the statewide rail plan and working with MnDOT, because we concur with the urgency to get that completed for the region.
Mr. Chair, and with regard to the legislator involvement, what is the process for getting our involvement in that plan?
Chair and Senator Bonhoeffer, I would prefer to defer to MnDOT on that, as that's their lead. There was a discussion yesterday at a passenger rail task force, to the point that Senator Sieben talked about earlier, of in the interim before a formal new plan is adopted, and that does have to be federally approved, so it takes some time, that there's an interim process that's apparently acceptable to the federal government that would involve a statewide consensus. And so MnDOT talked yesterday about there's legislative participation there and bringing the statewide plan in its draft form for check-in to a group. But beyond that, I'd prefer that MnDOT speak to that.
Senator Bonhoeffer, Mr. Peterson is in the room. Maybe towards the end, if he agrees, we can have him come forward and answer that question.
Thank
I think
you.
There's a lot of interest. It's been brought up earlier, too. So, great. Thank you. Continue.
Okay. On finance, just generally some issues. I don't think any of these will surprise you. There is a lack of funding for highway expansion. We also have volatility and decrease of MVS revenues. This impacts both highway funding as well as transit funding, since they both receive MVS. We do have a need for a growing source of revenue to grow our bus operations. Right now, we're essentially trying to maintain what we have. So if we want to grow that, we need to increase. You all personally are aware of the volatility of gas prices, and then the volume of gas consumed, of course, directly relates to the gas tax revenues that are collected. So that really impacts the highway portion of our plans. Many costs are going up faster than inflation, primarily construction costs. Just in the last 6 months, there's been some pretty wild fluctuations. They were very high last year. Things have come down, more competitive bids right now, but it's very uncertain. And then, of course, the federal revenues. There's a lot of anticipation on a new transportation bill and an economic stimulus recovery, but we don't know quite what that will be. So those are some of the things we've had to deal with in this plan. Now, kind of moving on to mobility here in the region. First of all, just a sign of mobility. Looking ahead to 2030, this is a map we have in our plan that basically identifies which corridors would be congested in 2030. And as you can see, almost, not quite, but almost every line is dark blue. And that means that essentially these roads for at least an hour a day would be considered congested. Many of them would be more than an hour a day. The bottom line here is that these roads would be carrying more traffic than they were designed to handle, thus leading to congestion. So you can see that that's a significant, almost every road in the region.
So, Ms. McCarthy, so at least an hour a day, you said they're congested?
Yes, at least an hour a day.
Do we distinguish between an hour or more? The reason I'm asking is, you know, sometimes an hour a day's congestion is not a bad thing. Because if we build to relieve congestion for that 1 hour, we're putting a lot of money into a big road that otherwise is going to be way too big for the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. So do we make a distinction there?
We don't, Mr. Chair, in our plan here, but the data is definitely there to your question, yes. And I think that that would speak to priorities and things like that, okay. Yes, definitely.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question on this map.
Yes.
County Road 42 through Dakota County. It's kind of a, you know, parts of it are look like they're congested. There was an article just a couple weeks ago. Somebody, you know, reporters took a drive from one side to the next. It took them 35, 45 minutes because of all the stoplights. And there's going to be continued future development along that. I mean, how did you put together this plan? What kind of variables did you put in place? Briefly, anyway, did you factor in the stoplights? Did you factor in future development, things like that? How did you determine that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dahl, basically we use the regional model to do the forecasting for travel in the region, not only for transit but for roads. And again, using anticipated development and travel time. And so that is how we arrive at that.
A modeling exercise. Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator, and the follow-up is that since there's some spots that are not showing congestion, are you assuming that they're going to somehow get better than they are today, that you're factoring that in? Because it seems to me that that's already a congested line or a roadway, and yet you're saying now that there's parts of it, at least half of it, that's not going to be congested. There's things that you have in place that are going to relieve that congestion?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl, to this. First of all, I think the total corridor would be looked at. Again, when modeling, you can get some things like this shows with segments. But I don't think that those blue segments would be looked at in isolation compared to the total corridor. The other thing is, again, what was the road designed to handle? It, you know, County Road 42 is not like an interstate, and there are signals and things like that. So it gets back to what it's carrying versus its design capacity.
Thanks.
Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, I live just north of 62 Crosstown, and I can't help but wonder if this congestion map includes the new construction that's to be completed on these highways, or if by 2030 they are going to be congested again, and I have to go through another 3 years of construction.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Kielash, it does include planned construction. So, I mean, 2030 is a few years away, and we know that we make improvements to roads, and then congestion comes back in a few years.
I think, congestion, I mean, the more roads you build, the more people drive, the more spread out things get, the more people drive. It's a never-ending cycle. But then, Senator Kielash, people will have a choice. They can sit in congestion, or they can go right past it in excellent transit service. So, what do they say? Building roads to combat congestion is like buying a bigger belt to combat obesity.
So. Mr. Chairman, that's Senator what's made Day. America great. That's what's made America great, Mr. Chairman, is roads and cars.
And obesity.
And people moving around.
And people moving around. That's key, right. Senator Day. People moving around.
Well, we all know that the region is anticipated to add about 1 million residents between the early, about 2004 and 2030. And historically, travel has been increasing faster than highway expansion. Remembering that map that I just showed you, if we were to solve all that congestion by 2030, it would really take 20 times more than the amount of money that we have assumed in our plan. Now, I guess different people would have different perspectives on you know, whether how much money we can assume in the future, but 20 times is a rather significant amount. So a very expensive price tag to do that. And then the maintenance and preservation of our existing system really requires a significant continuing investment to keep it up and operating well. So with our plan, what we are doing here is shifting. Our previous emphasis was fixing congestion. And so what we want to do here is manage congestion. That doesn't mean there won't be expansions and things. There will be. It's just to have a different strategic eye towards how we go about solving our problems. Now, how we want to do this, how we want to manage congestion in this plan is we really want to optimize our highway investments to move the largest number of people and not necessarily cars. And we'll get to an example here in a moment. We want to invest in very strategic highway expansion. We need to be careful to not design every project and build it as if we were going to completely build the entire region out of congestion, because then, again, the price tag gets very high on individual projects and we can't accomplish as much. We also need to be very strategic in our transit investments. We need both road and transit investments, and we need to use our dollars very carefully. Part of the way we can be strategic in moving people in this region is through land use. And there's been a great learning curve in this region on the relationship between land use and transportation, and we need to continue to build that and understand the relationship, working with our local units of government that do that planning work and the zoning and things like that. Then we need to promote all those other modes to driving alone, such as walking, biking, carpooling, more telecommuting, which the UPA is promoting. And again, just in summary, promoting more travel choices beyond driving alone in the vehicle. Now, this map is from 2006 and just demonstrates how we move some people. You've often heard that we can carry on bus the equivalent of one lane of single-occupant traffic. And really what I'd like to highlight here is have you look kind of in the center of your map. On 394 there, it's the one bar stack that has blue in it. And you will see that's where we have our MinPass hot lane. That's a joint road transit solution. And as you can see, that one lane carries the transit riders in red, and folks in autos that pay a toll are in blue. And together, we carry in that one lane more people than we carry in the other remaining two lanes. So this is an idea of a solution of where we can really use that capacity well in the road. Now I'd like to just talk about highways for a minute. Again, we have growing demand for travel, limited capacity on our highways, and that's the reality. Our long-term gas costs are unknown. How much the price of gas impacts people's travel. So not only does that impact the gas tax receipts, which are so critical to funding our highway system, but it also actually impacts the congestion and the amount of demand on our roads. We do have an increasing cost to maintain our system. The larger your system gets, the greater, of course, your cost to just maintain it, to preserve it. And with the funding passed last year, the first priority for highway funding is the rehabilitation of the bridges in the state of Minnesota. The highway funding plan, just to kind of help you understand how it's broken down, preservation, you can see, is by far the largest number on this slide. Again, it speaks to the large cost to maintain our system. The BARC there, that acronym stands for the Bridge and Road Construction Program. So following preservation, we have significant safety improvements, and there's a great federal emphasis on safety you should be aware of. We have some federal requirements regarding safety. Congestion mitigation, very important. A couple of common examples we use, the Highway 100 improvement, and then also on I-94 near 3M. And then community improvements. Some of you might be familiar with the term cooperative agreements. This is when MnDOT funds a share of a improvement that is primarily led by a local unit of government, and they fund the majority of the cost. The highway plan does provide for some projects to be accomplished. The funded plan includes 4 Tier 1 bridges and 26 other bridges that will be rehabilitated. We do meet our preservation needs for the highway system, so that is very good news. We do meet the federal requirements for safety investments, and we're able to accomplish some low-cost congestion management projects. We have a much longer list that we cannot fund, but we are able to do some. And then a very important point is that we did have about a dozen major expansion projects in the past plan. And what we say in the current plan is that we will reassess these. We really want to look at each project scope, and MnDOT would be taking the lead on this, to see can we scale it back somewhat in scope but still accomplish the primary purpose of what that project was to do. Basically just trim it down a little bit, and we want to see if that can help us use our dollars more wisely. Then there's a map just for your information on the bridge projects that are in our plan. And I should mention, this whole document is on the council's website. If there's one particular thing you're interested in, it's available there. And then this map shows the expansion projects that I just spoke to. Those 12 that are going to be reassessed are the ones you see in the solid red lines there. I would like to talk just a little bit about our response to the economic stimulus package. As I mentioned, right near the end of our process as, yes, this is for highways, right near the end of our process for adopting the plan, we realized, though, we wanted to be ready to be responsive. And to use federal money, you have to meet all the federal criteria. And that means a project has to be in what we call the TIP, the Transportation Improvement Program, in order to use federal money. There's quite a process for a TIP and a TIP amendment. So we have revised the plan so that any one of these major expansion projects, if chosen, could be funded. We had to work closely with MPCA. We're very appreciative to MPCA for working with us quite quickly, because you have to run the federally mandated air conformity analysis. So we do have that flexibility in our plan.
Ms. McCarthy,
yes.
There will also be dollars coming forward for transit purposes.
Yes.
Or will we be prepared to take advantage of those dollars?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm sure as many people are, we've been trying to keep up to speed with the different numbers that are coming out of Washington, D.C., and the different programs. There are different deadlines from different entities. But, yes, we are working on identifying that and understanding the processes in general. We feel the transit money will flow through the processes that exist today through formula funds and things like that, and then would be distributed as they are today by the same entity.
So it wasn't necessary to do something special like we did for the 12 expansion projects in this plan to prepare ourselves for that eventuality?
Mr. Chair, we don't think so. This was a pretty major deal, especially with the air conformity. It takes a bit of time.
Mm-hmm.
TAB has been meeting to, in the event a project that we would want to have funded is not in the TIP, how could we advance a TIP amendment very quickly, kind of an accelerated process for this special case.
Okay.
So TAB has been looking at that, so we could be very responsive.
How are you, given the sensitivity to speed, but there, you know, mm-hmm. We have stakeholders and an interested public as well as interested representatives of the public. How are you going to if we're able to fund one of these 12 or do something major on transit in response to the economic recovery package, how are you going to involve the community in that decision?
Well, Mr. Chair, first of all, these projects, the money that comes through TAB, for those of you who don't know, TAB is a representative board of 33 people, many of them elected officials representing counties and cities in the region. They have been working on what I'll say priorities and criteria for selecting and recommending projects. I can't speak to the specifics of the public process really until we get the actual language, but it will be on a fast track. What we have heard is that at least 50% of the transit funds, for example, must be committed within 120 days. If you don't, you will lose it, and that money will be reallocated to a region that did commit 50% of their funds in 120 days. So I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Judge.
Mr. Chair, members, I know Chairman Bell, when he arrives, I know wanted to speak to part of the transit components of the Recovery Act, and I think that what Arlene had to say about the involvement from the public. Again, a lot of that we have to wait to see what this legislation is going to look like. But I am certain that we will be before the committee talking about this, and as well as with the public. I know our Transportation Advisory Board is made up of members from the counties and the cities, and there's also representation of folks who are appointed by the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities. So they will be engaging the cities and the greater public along with the council and MnDOT as we proceed with this.
So Mr. Chair?
It'll be done out in the open. With
Mr. Chair?
First we have Senator Dahl, and then we'll go to Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just on this expansion, projects to be reassessed then, so one of the lines here is on 494 South Corridor. Now, I don't know if that's something that you know, if the MnDOT's going to be making those decisions or what, but it's I was just talking with Senator Ma about the congestion that backs up in both directions there. Mm-hmm. And it really it focuses on the fact that that interchange between 35 and 494 is really the culprit. Is that going to be part of the reassessment? Is that or is that still going to be considered separately and put off? Or you know how are you going to if you're doing the reassessment and factoring in what the budgeting is going to be? And I'd like to see that included instead of just expanding the roadway a little bit but not addressing really the central problem. Do you know if that from
Chair
your point
Dibble and Senator McCarthy. Dahl, the answer is yes, that is part of the project. The interchange is part of the project.
Okay.
So it would be part of the reassessment.
Okay, thank you. And Mr.
Senator
Chair,
Dahl.
One last thing is then you've got the circled areas here. I see that's the 494-169 interchange. And is this one on the north side, is that the 610? My understanding is those are being kind of targeted right now, maybe with this federal stimulus money. Is that the case?
Senator Dahl, the chair, that is the river crossing up to the north there. The circle 610 is a little bit further down.
Need to really squint.
There you go.
Okay.
Need to put on your readers.
Yeah. Are those going to be targeted for the, and I'll take a first tier with any federal stimulus money to be projects?
Ms. Chair Dibble and Senator Dahl, those projects are not designed yet. I mean, they're not ready to go. My understanding is there is a portion of 610 between Highway 169 and County Road 130, I believe. It is in the tip today. That would be ready to go but is not fully funded. So that would be something that would be eligible perhaps for economic recovery.
It's the red
funding.
Line.
Well, Mr. Chair, one last thing then on that. The 610 you're saying is probably that shovel-ready type of project, but the 494-169 is not?
A portion of 610, of the new 610 is ready.
Thank you.
Yes, and I believe that the 169-494 is also designed.
Okay.
It would be eligible.
It is. All right.
Yes.
Thank you. That's what I thought.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, following up on Senator Dibble's question, when you stated 120 days for a project to be that has to be ready, what transit projects are that close?
McCarthy.
He was asking. So what could be done or what could be achieved if there's money available for that area?
Chair Dibble and Senator Olson, first of all, I wanted to also in response to Senator Dibble's question, we do have the four-year TIP, or Transportation Improvement Plan, here in the region already, and the council has its adopted 6-year capital improvement plan. So what we have already done is identify our plan, and that will become the basis for identifying some projects that we can use to screen for economic stimulus funding. So there are some facilities of some garage improvements. There are some 3-car train program for the Hiawatha Light Rail. There are some park and ride programs. What we're struggling with right now are eligibility rules and years of funding. Sometimes they'll say something budgeted for 09 already or programmed cannot be funded with economic stimulus because, in I think the view is, it's going to happen anyway. We want more with this economic stimulus package. So until the rules really shake out, it's very difficult to say, here's the set of eligible projects, because we just don't know. But that doesn't mean we aren't, we're looking at all the projects. You want to have them designed or ready to go to put out for contract.
And Mr. Chair and
Mr. Shedden.
Senator Olson, one of the points that I know the Chairman Bell will be making, that I hope not to steal his thunder here, but the council is still going to have an operating deficit that we're going to be having to deal with this next legislative session. And one of our major goals with any federal money that we receive is to receive flexibility to use that to help fill the hole that we're going to have in our operating system. And that is our, 1 through 10 goals with this stimulus money would be to allow us to use that, get flexibility with those dollars for us to use it for our operating deficit. And so we're hearing that there's some money that will be available. There's $1 billion within that Recovery Act that is set aside for transit. And what we're hearing is that part of that will be allowed for operating assistance. So we're trying to see if some of that is available, and if it's not, then try to see if we can get some flexibility in the fixed guideway dollars and then also in the transit capital dollars, because our major issue right now in this region is our operating deficit. And we also suspect that with the February forecast that will be coming, and everybody's reading the news about how Detroit and the car sales have been going, that we anticipate that MBEST may take it on the nose here again. So we have a budget deficit right now, and we anticipate it to get a little bit worse.
Senator Bonoff, and then Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back to this map. Could you update me on the status of the section on 494, the northern section?
North of
394. I know that that's that piece that is the only piece that didn't get widened when the whole rest of the highway got widened, and so
the north-south stretch.
Yes.
There.
Yeah. Yes.
McCarthy.
Senator Dibble and Senator Bonoff. My understanding is that they haven't designed that yet. They haven't selected the preferred alternative, the preferred solution for that.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, and Ms. McCarthy, that I find that hard to believe, because the whole thing was supposed to be widened at the same time for, several years ago. Everything got done, but for some reason they left that stretch, and so it's actually minimized the effectiveness of the whole project. People just sit there. I mean, it's...
Yes, and there was a Senator Chair Dibble and Senator Bonoff. There was some significant work done a couple of years ago on that corridor, and my understanding is they're re-evaluating that, and they will be re-looking at that. So we can get you more detailed information on the specific next step, shall we say, for that corridor.
Well, and members, this brings to light the fact that there was a we had a fairly well-established figure of shortcomings in our transportation funding. And we passed a significant bill, but it came to about a third of what that number was. And that's why we see maps like this.
Thank you.
So we have Senator Moore first and then Senator Day.
Well, Mr. Chair, I mean, my memory gets faulty the longer I'm here, but I seem to recall years past we've had conversations where we've talked about the fact that perhaps the Met Council might not be able to spend some of the money that we're requiring that they spend on things. And then as the session continues, we find that we're continuing to operate in deficit. And now we're hearing that we're looking for some flexible dollars coming from the federal government to try to address that deficit. And it's my understanding that however we spend the money, it's supposed to create jobs or address a jobs issue. Mr. Chair, at some point I hope that we would hear a report back on some of the federal stimulus money that if it does actually make it here, that we might hear a report back about how that's connected to jobs or job creation.
Thank you, Senator Waugh. That is my sincere hope, too, and I think we're going to hear from Chair Bell. So I'll ask that question again when Chairman Bell gets here. Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, we could probably ask when we had our large gas tax where the 30,000 jobs are in Minnesota. That was what I heard for 4 months. If I voted for a gas tax, I would. But to answer Senator Bonov's, if you look at it, for 25 years we had a four-lane highway. We're so far behind the times. We talk about congestion. You could get in your car today, and if you went around Madison, you'd have 6-8 lanes. If you went around Milwaukee, you'd have 8-10 lanes. If you went around Chicago, you'd have 10 or 14 lanes. We'd go around Indianapolis, 8-10. You go around Cincinnati, 8-10. Lexington, Kentucky, out in the freeways in Madison, way out. Any of these towns. And if you went to Knoxville, Tennessee, 10 lanes. I could take in every lane around here. I could take you through Des Moines and take you to Kansas City and Oklahoma City and all of that. We are so far behind that it's fine that MnDOT did put a little bit of money into 494 and 694, and we've got a little relief. But when we sit here talking about moving a lot of people around, realizing that 85% of the people that move around in the 7-county metro area don't move around in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and we're going to put all our transit money running from St. Paul to Minneapolis, and I won't get into the Hiawatha thing. It didn't relieve congestion. If you look at the ridership, you'll see on weekends the ridership is almost as high. If the ridership is 26,000 on a normal day, if you look at a weekends, it's the same, or it's at night because people are going to Garth Brooks and Tina Turner and the Twins and the Vikings, and we're subsidizing those big time, and that's half of our ridership. So I wish we'd take $965 million and put it into a bus system in the metropolitan area. We would have the finest bus system in the world, and we would really accomplish something. Then we could get in out to Woodbury, and we could go near people's homes and whatever. This rail line, I'm telling you, somebody has to get to the rail line. The whole Hiawatha thing, I mean, they don't even take tickets, and I've looked at all the transfers, and I ride on it, and I tried to analyze it all, and at one time I said it was so much foo-foo dust, it's going to kill us in subsidies. My good friends, it's going to kill us in subsidies over the long period of time, and we are not going to accomplish anything for people that are living out around that want to get downtown to work or want to go from Woodbury to Edina or wherever. And I just think our emphasis should be more on roads right now than it is on transit, and I think we're all going to go to central corridors, and we're really going to spend a lot more time, and I'm not talking about your study, but more time on transit, and it bothers me immensely, but that's beside the point. I'm sure it's a go. I mean, we just keep talking like we're building it, and it's going to go down University, and heaven help all those people in St. Paul and Minneapolis. To go where? I mean, 85% of the people work and move and recreate and do other things outside of Minneapolis and St. Paul in the 7-county metro area. The people are moving around. They don't all go in a stationary set pattern. And it's
anyway, flexibility.
Mr. Chairman, that's enough of my ranting and raving for an early morning or afternoon or whatever.
Right. Thank you, Senator Day. I would be disappointed if I didn't hear it.
At least
why don't you continue? Members, we have about an hour or a little less than an hour to get through, actually 50 minutes to get everything. Plus, we have folks from the public who are here to rant and rave as well. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just kind of wrapping up here on highways, as I mentioned, our policy plan has quite a work plan for us to accomplish. And we've listed three key things here on the highway system. First of all, there's what we're calling a Metro Highway System Investment Strategy. We do need some road improvements in the region. So what we want to do is provide a more detailed long-term vision for highways. We want to provide some recommendations on how to optimize the system so we can provide some capacity expansion by using shoulders. The UPA is going to provide us an opportunity to try a dynamically priced shoulder lane, take existing shoulder capacity and turn it into more usable capacity. So these are the things within our existing right-of-way that we really want to try to maximize. And some through lanes. Often there's a bottleneck, and if you can get a small through lane improvement or something, you can really help a larger corridor. So we really want to do that. We need to apply our philosophy that we come up with equally across the region and try to come up with what would be the right size system. Something less than fully building our way out of expansion, but definitely some improvements. The next item is a federal requirement that we develop a congestion management process. So we need to meet our federal requirements, and what we want to do is essentially continue on the program we've been doing with what we call our low-cost, high-benefit projects, things that are relatively small investment but get you a relatively big bang for the buck, smoothing traffic flow and improving our mobility. The second item is to develop a transportation demand management strategy. So the council will be taking the lead on that, whereas MnDOT will be taking the lead on the low-cost, high-benefit project analysis. And then the last thing I've already mentioned with the map that we spent some time on today, that we will be reassessing all of those projects. MnDOT will be the lead, but again, council will be working closely with them to search for getting the improvement that's desired, but maybe at a streamlined cost. The bottom line is we commit in our policy plan to amendment in 2010 to basically incorporate the results of all these studies in there by 2010. Another benefit of an amendment in 2010 is we will know the results of the economic stimulus package, and we will also have the new federal transportation bill. Which is scheduled for 2009 authorization. So we think that that will be timely on many fronts.
So, Ms. McCarthy, when you get rolling on actual, you know, drafts and considering actual changes to the plan for 2010?
Mr. Chair, we would anticipate that we would be doing a tremendous amount of this work in 2009, perhaps going into early 2010. Then we go through a similar public comment process that we just completed with the transportation policy plan. So it goes through a very formal and long public comment process.
With adoption coming?
Late 2010.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, transit section.
On the transit, basically the goal remains the same in this plan as we had in the previous one, and that is that we want to work towards doubling ridership by 2030. Two key ways we're going to do that is the total region's bus system must be strengthened and continue to grow, and also to build a network of transit ways. That goal means we have an increase in ridership of 3% per year, and we have actually been able to exceed that goal slightly since we set it back in 2003. You can see the last couple of years we've exceeded it, and just this morning I received the preliminary 2008 ridership results, and it appears we're at almost 95 million rides in 2008, which is a growth of 6.5% over the 89 million rides in 2007. So we really have, even with our resources, we've really been maximizing the ridership.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Carthy, do you ever do a calculation of that in relation to the passenger trips in the metro area, the total passenger trips that are made, and how much of that is transit? Because I've heard the figure between 2% and 3% is what we are now. So therefore, if you doubled it, that's 4%, or maybe 5% of the passenger trips, which means that 95% are still using the roads and bridges. And then when you look at the investment in relation to what you're getting, I think it gives you a little different picture. Have you ever done that? Or
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, yes, we every 10 years we do what we call our travel behavior inventory. It takes a bit of data collection to get what we call the mode split, which is what you're speaking of. And yes, the last time in year 2000 that we did that, the mode split was about 2.3%. So if you take all trips taken over a year, it's about 2.3%. Now, so that's on the macro level. But if you look at certain times of the day and days of the week, for example, back in 2000, working with Minneapolis on a study, this was pre-Hiawatha, about 40% of the people traveling to Minneapolis, downtown Minneapolis, for work use transit. So it speaks to that's at the same time as your peak congestion periods on your highways. So there is kind of a correlation. There are many times of the day or places in the region where transit is not an option. Express service, very successful in this region, but it operates rush hours only. But yes, you are correct that the it's about between 2% and 3%.
And Mr. Chairman, so to what the subsidy that's involved? In other words, if you operated transit and you wanted to do it cost effectively, you'd do it express kinds of runs, which don't take all the time of everybody having to stop for everybody. When the peak times of travel are, I suppose we lose the opportunities for those two or three people that you see riding on a bus or even on a light rail car at an odd hour. But that costs a lot. Is that the most effective way of dealing with that kind of need? And could we, you know, save the hundreds of millions and spend it differently than we are putting into subsidizing the kind of approaches that we're taking?
Ms. McCarthy.
Mr. Chair, I think that's a discussion many people have over and over again, the trade-off of mobility. Quite honestly, it's first of all, the subsidy on express routes, because it's a more expensive trip to deliver, is higher than a subsidy on most urban local routes. And the light rail has the lowest subsidy of all because of the high volumes of people it carries. There is a challenge also to delivering roads in the region. Even if we had a lot of money, there are the cost to build the roads. There is resistance from a right-of-way, from a land-use perspective, things like that. So it is a trade-off from a land-use perspective also. And when we go out to try to build roads, we can or grow roads, there's some resistance in that fashion also. But it's an investment choice in the region.
And let's not fool ourselves. There is a subsidy, Senator Olson, for roads. Roads don't pay for themselves. The user fees we always like to talk about don't fully pay for roads. There's a subsidy that goes into all forms of surface transportation. And then there's, kind of indirect subsidies that go into supporting any sort of transportation, but especially roads, You're not giving people transportation choices. You're requiring them to own a second car, sometimes a third car. That's an additional $10,000 a year they're paying to operate a car. If you don't have decent transit options to get to certain places, you're requiring, lots of parking. Sometimes that costs, sometimes that free. But even if it's free, it's a land cost. I mean, so, we have to make sure we're factoring all forms of expense and subsidy into all transportation. And it's no small thing to exclude transportation for people at off-peak hours, too.
Mr. Chairman, I've always tried to figure that out because I hear that comment made, but the transportation budgets, most of it is the Highway User Trust Fund, and it's what we pay in our gas tax. That's not a subsidy. That's what we are. That's what, how we are funding that form of transportation.
But it's also supported.
That the what you're talking about, the people who are in fact using it, are paying the fees on their registration. To do that. It's not coming for nothing. Like this, we think that the federal money is going to be something for nothing, which it's not. But it is not the same in the kind of subsidy that we're talking about for transit, because there we're either asking property taxpayers or people who wouldn't come near or aren't near the use of it that are asked to pick up the tab. So, I mean, I haven't quite figured out when you say that all of the subsidy that's going on there, if it is actual subsidy of general funds that everybody pays that is not essentially benefiting from it. And I'll be willing to stand corrected if you can tell me what it is. But I hear the term tossed out, and I don't hear the deal.
Well, we'll get that. I mean, we have this circular conversation incessantly about what's subsidized and what's not. So we will have I'll get that to you.
The whole committee will get
that information, and we will have this conversation about how transportation is paid for. We can have a philosophical conversation about whether or not we should subsidize transportation or not, but transportation simply does not pay for itself. No form of transportation. It comes through a variety of direct and indirect sources. We have the highest fare recovery of any transit system, or among the highest in the country, so and it's not as if though we're not doing quite a bit in the fare box as well in transit. And the suburban riders, whom a lot of folks in this room represent, have the highest subsidy for their transit ride of anyone. They pay more.
I understand.
But it's a more expensive ride. Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, and to Senator Olson, one of the interesting facts is if you look up, like, on the light rail, you will find that the peak hours and the off-peak hours are a difference of about 2,000 riders a day. Like, on a peak hours, it'd be like 14,000, and off-peak would be like about 12,000. But the interesting thing is we spend $800 million on this, then we subsidize all the people that ride it, but then it's only 10% of all the transportation in the whole metropolitan area. So the bang for the buck is so much better if you spend millions and millions of dollars, I believe, on roads and buses. And we're hung up now on the light rail because we in Jacksonville, everybody used to talk about Portland, but in that they have the highest unemployment and their whole state's going under. I guess we don't talk about that anymore. Now it's going to be Salt Lake City. It's like a sizzle on a state.
Senator Day, we will also have a little analysis of how much transportation you get for the dollar, roads versus transit, because I think you'll find that also very interesting.
Well, some of the
Mr. Chairman,
I hope you
can't
you
just
know
say
I'm
stuff
not,
without I, data I to support it, and I think it,
the
it, support
Mr. Those. Chairman, I cannot pass up the opportunity to say that at
Senator
one
Olson.
Point we ought to make a small start investment in seeing what PRT could do, because I think it would surprise everybody in terms of the low cost, both in initial investment and subsidy, and the 24/7 service that's expressed for each one who travels on it.
Okay. All right. Well, we've had a nice philosophical exchange of views. We have about a half hour left,
okay.
And we have a
Thank you.
Whole section to hear from the Met Council, and people want to share some information with us. So
okay.
Let's keep it going, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to summarize some of the progress, and we like to do this with our plan that has been made in the last 4 years, we all know Hiawatha opened in 2004. North Star will be opening here in late 2009. Central Corridor is in PE, soon to be in final design with an opening for 2014 slated. And then through the Urban Partnership Agreement, we're able to advance components of 35W and Cedar Avenue BRT. So those are projects that are very much underway. And I, if I add up those transitways, that's between 90 and 100 miles of transitways. So we have accomplished a few things here in the region. But we're continuing to look ahead. Southwest is under its environmental impact work. Botno is also undergoing alternatives analysis, both of those being led by Hennepin County. Red Rock last year did complete its alternatives analysis, and the Rush Line is currently undergoing the AA work.
Mr. Chairman, can I just ask
Senator
one
question?
Mr. Chairman, on the Southwest and the Botano, is there any effort to make those grades separated? I think one of the things that causes, I think actually contributes to congestion, is the fact that the way that that is managed when it's at a grade level, and particularly if it's parallel or close to an existing roadway. Because Hiawatha was a four-lane trunk highway that has become a local street. When I heard a Jefferson Lines bus driver tell me that there were garages along there, that he had to wait 14 minutes to be able to make a left turn to get into their garage. That roadway is not, it's actually, it was reducing congestion. It is now, traffic is being transferred back onto our freeways, contributing to congestion. I hope that doesn't happen with Southwest and Botano. Well, Botano is parallel to a state highway, but the Southwest is kind of crossing. Is there a way of keeping that separated? Because I think that's where you can get better time for the passengers and not mess up the traffic patterns and the life of those who are using other modes.
Ms. McCarthy.
Senator Dibble and Senator Olson, I know that, for example, on Southwest, at least one of the alignments does have a tunnel proposed for a segment of it. Certainly the whole thing is not completely grade separated in either one of these. They are primarily at grade in their own dedicated right-of-way, however, primarily. The major transit issues, I think people are pretty familiar with this. As I mentioned, our ridership is growing. That means demand is increasing for our service. MVEST has been volatile and actually declining for us. Our operating costs continue to grow. I've already discussed land use. We do need to continue to make progress in the relationship of land use and transit. They are very dependent. Successful transit is very dependent on good land use. And then congestion hinders fast, reliable transit. And as we talked about, this is why our work with the highways is going to be so important, to come up with solutions that address both roads and transit. And again, the 394 hot lane is a great example where you have a solution that's aiding both transit and the single occupant vehicle. And we really think there's opportunity in this region for more of that. So it's a multimodal solution. And the way I put it is, what's the right solution for the right corridor? We have to really do the analysis and understand the problem we're trying to solve. That's what the FTA says. What problem are you trying to solve? That's their key question when you want funding from them. So we're looking at where we could utilize existing right-of-way and make sure we don't have transit stuck in that congestion. Just in summary, we need to strengthen our bus system. It's an important component. Transitways are one segment, but we cannot forget about the very important local bus system. And we need that throughout the region to provide transit to all people. So that means on our local roads, our arterial streets, and more to the suburban express bus improvements. And we can't forget about ADA, Metro Mobility. That is a federal requirement, and actually our Metro Mobility ridership grew last year as much as any service. The demand is out there, and that's federal. We must fund it. We do not have a choice. So that's very important. And then we also, in our plan, acknowledge that there may be a need for a long-distance express service that would go outside of the metro area, and we would work with adjacent counties perhaps in assisting coordinating that. We've had some interest from some counties. And then a map, it's a very busy map, not the idea to focus on any one route, but to communicate. There's a lot of need, and we've identified that there will be a lot of need. This is for 2030, but what we would envision being the growth in the bus system. Then on to transitways. The modes of a transitway in our plan our commuter rail, light rail, bus rapid transit, and express bus corridors with transit advantages. This is consistent with our previous plan. This has been our definition of transitways for quite a few years now. And then to the earlier discussion with Senator Sieben regarding inner city passenger rail, we do speak to the passenger rail in our plan. We speak to it in our work plan, as well as identifying that development of this passenger rail by others, and it is also a different funding source through the FRA. However, if that investment occurs, it then makes much more feasible some transit improvements in this region. And so we definitely acknowledge that. The next slide summarizes the recommendations for looking at our future transitway corridors, summarize those that are well on their way. I don't need to go over them. Develop as either as a transitway of some sort. You will see the list of 8 corridors there, and I think many of you are familiar with them. And then we also want to develop an arterial street BRT. These tend to be much lower cost improvements and perhaps would be very good candidates for the small starts and very small starts programs through the FTA. So we plan to look into that. And then again, our express bus corridors with transit advantages, primarily bus-only shoulders. And then also the development of 2 hubs. As you look at our network, and maybe I'll have Judd go to the next map, as you look at our network of transitways that we would like to develop, you can see that the common points are downtown Minneapolis and downtown St. Paul, where many lines come together. And therefore, there is the Union Depot in St. Paul with a lot of work underway towards its development, and then analysis in Minneapolis for a intermodal hub in Minneapolis near where North Star and Central and Hiawatha will all join there near the Twins ballpark. Now, as I said, we have some funding assumptions in our plan, and while we need the studies, we just identified the corridors to be studied. The studies will tell us what solution per each corridor, but in general we can fund, based on our assumptions, a few transitways out to 2030. Based on our high-level estimating and not knowing specific corridors, so using ballpark figures per corridor, after Central Corridor, we can afford 3 more LRT lines by 2030, and we can afford 1 by 2020, another one started somewhat before 2020 and completed soon after, and a third completed by 2030. And I would like to take this moment to comment. Yes, that is a sequential construction. The idea is only one would be under construction at one time. But that represents over $100 million a year in New Starts money coming in. And when we did meet with the FTA, we had a Washington, D.C. FTA person here last week, as well as Utah and Denver. When staff met with these folks on Thursday, they asked us, how much federal money are you planning on? And what they told us was, the FTA person said they advise to program $75 million a year in New Starts funds. They said that's what they like to see, although they acknowledge some recent awards have gone up to $125 million a year. So I'm not sure if the focus should be on whether things are sequential versus consecutive, but their advice was the amount of money per year that you can reasonably expect to get. And quite honestly, our plan is very on target with that number because we're over $100 million a year in this plan. So we'll have to see. It all depends on the amount of federal money. On commuter rail, we could afford a commuter rail line between 2020 and 2030. This does assume, however, that we got some benefit from some inner-city passenger rail to help with the capital costs. We could afford 4 highway BRT corridors. Again, that would be probably a nice joint highway and transit solution. And then the 9 arterial BRTs, which are, again, pretty low cost. But it's very important to note that our operating costs for both the base bus system and the transitways are not fully funded, partially but not fully. I will not take the time to go over our cost and revenues. There's more detail on that in the plan if you're interested. It just kind of summarizes the cost to maintain our system, which of course is our priority, and then to expand. And Mr. Chair, we do have information on the other modes, but I think we could leave that to you to look at your leisure.
I think that's best, because we do have about 25 minutes left for some folks to provide some perspective.
And then on we did at the very back have a slide on economic recovery funding. Just to kind of wrap up on that.
Here he is.
Oh.
So while Chairman Bell makes his way to the table, it's Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to make sure they go over the first line of the non-motorized issues.
First line, non-motorized.
First line, and then I'll be happy because I have constituents coming in, you know.
Oh, we need more bicycling. How's that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
More bicycle facilities. All right,
bicycle rate is up, yet barriers still exist.
So noted. Thank you.
Here we go. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
And I share your interests, so. And I think we'll have some comment to that effect. Welcome, Chairman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
To the actual hub of excitement in the Capitol, right here.
Yes, yes. I wanted to speak very, very briefly on the economic stimulus package that is being developed in Washington, really, as we speak. Right now, we are anticipating, though, of course, this is a moving ball, about $86 million that may be coming to the state of Minnesota for transit services. We are not at present totally clear on how those dollars can be used. What's the definition of shovel-ready projects? How we can use that perhaps to cover some of our operating deficit and the like. We have developed three principles that I'll review with you very briefly and then, of course, entertain any questions regarding this. At present, we look at having an operating deficit in our transit system for fiscal year 10 and 11 of about $45 million. There are a number of different ways or strategies or categories that we're looking at to address that deficit. Perhaps chief amongst them is the use of stimulus dollars that will come down from Washington. And as you can see on our principles, as I have said repeatedly in public, it is my number one, two, and three priority for any stimulus dollars to use to address this deficit. The second use is is for capital improvements that improve operational efficiency. Again, that would have to meet other criteria that the federal government would have. And then capital investments with minimal operating tails. One of the concerns, Mr. Chair, that we have is not to fund additional components of our transportation system if we don't have a clear idea of the operating costs for that additional parts of our system. So those are the principles that we are using. We should have more clarity on that in the next couple of weeks and then be able to develop plans based upon that increased information.
Thank you. And Chairman Bell, you just speak for just like 30 seconds because we do want to get to some testimony as well on a process of letting folks know how we're, you know, as the dollars come down or we get more clarity, how we're going to decide exactly how we're going to spend that money, both on the highway as well as the potential big project that we're going to pay for, as well as some of these transit.
Yes, on the highway side, of course, MnDOT will have primary responsibility for that, and I'm not sure of all the processes they will use. A great deal of the money that may come down to the Metropolitan Council, as we understand it now, will be in a formula, and it could likely go through our TAR process, the allocation process that we use there, and that's what we're thinking about at present. But again, we don't have complete clarity on that.
Great. Thanks, Senator Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chairman Bell, before you came, I had asked a question about being able to meet the criteria of job creation or stimulating the economy through the expenditure. I understand the budget deficit that we're looking at, or that you're looking at, in the hope that, obviously, whatever federal assistance we get, that would be very helpful. The intention is, how do we maximize that that will lead to some job creations? I, if if you have some plans or a response to that, I'd like to hear it. If not, I hope that as we move forward and the plans become clearer, you would pay us a visit to answer that question.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think that that's a very valid question. The way I have posed it, however, and this is an important point for me, is that it makes no sense in terms of economic stimulus if we hire a construction worker at the same time we lay off a bus driver. And so maintaining our system is really my number one priority, particularly because our current system, and particularly our current bus system, disproportionately serves low-income populations and transit-dependent populations. And to maintain the core and the integrity of that system is very important. Now, once we do that, and if we're able to secure that, I am not only open but enthusiastic about building out our system in a manner that would provide additional employment. And to the final part of your question, I would always be welcome, or members of the staff, to come back to this committee and update you on what our thinking is, particularly as the stimulus package, we get a little bit more meat on the bones. I think it's a very fair question to have us back and say, okay, what's your current thinking now? That's something that I think is we would be more than open to doing.
We would welcome that. I think we will take you up on that offer. Senator Dahl and members, we do have a list of folks who want to testify and very dwindling time. So in order to be courteous to our public, let's please wrap up here. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Chair Dibble. I'll be as short as I can here. I have two quick questions. One on this, the transit plan or the congestion plan you showed was pretty maxed out by 2030. Is that taking into account all of the things that we talked about in the transit plan as far as the expansion of the LRT and everything else, that's taking that into account? Okay. And the second question is, knowing that the big part of this is the funding streams, reliable funding streams, and what role is the Met Council going to take, or do you have proposals you're going to come forward with that help us figure out how we're going to come up with those funding streams so we can accomplish this goal?
Chair Bell?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl, that is the $64,000 question. We are, of course, hoping that we will be able to, and I am convinced we will, develop a strategy to deal with our current $45 million deficit. Actually, for fiscal year 9, it's $8.8 million, and then for 10 and 11, it's $45 million. Direct answer to your question is that we really are anticipating a rebound in MVEST receipts. Now, that's a moving target. It hasn't happened as yet. Since I've been at the council, it's been trending down. I personally don't think it's going to go back up to its previous level and previous expectations, but I do think it is going to go back up and will allow us to have some level of predictable funding source. In terms of new revenue streams to bring to bear into our transit system, right now I'm not anticipating any, with the possible exception of additional federal dollars. I think the budget for the Federal Transit Administration is likely to increase, and we may get additional federal receipts. But from the local level, we are not anticipating any new revenue streams.
Mr. Chair, if I could just want to follow up. I think sometimes I think that the general public is ahead of us on some of these things. And we that transit seminar we had last week, and we look at what Utah, they went through, 14 referendums. Each time they're saying we're willing to take on more to make this program work. I mean, we need to have a way to be able to do that. Obviously, we need a new funding stream. And if we looked at what we just did last year with the Legacy Act, that I don't know how many people believe we would actually pass it by the numbers that we did, especially in the way the economy is. I think, going to the public and saying, are you willing to support this? I think we need an advocate to do that. Is that something that the Met Council will be willing to step forward and start to advocate for?
Mr. Chair, Senator
Chair Bell.
That's a question I get posed a great deal about what role should the Met Council play in terms of advocating, particularly new funding streams. And quite candidly, how I view my role as chair of the Met Council is as a part of this administration. I view it in an analogous sense as the commissioner of corrections or commissioner of education or commissioner of human services. And the Commissioner of Human Services, I don't think he goes out and advocates for additional sources of revenues. I think he's expected to manage that department, mine existing sources of revenue, and creatively manage the budget he has. But I do not anticipate that I would get out in front of the governor and advocate for additional funding sources that he did not support. I see myself as a part of this administration. I serve at the pleasure of the governor, and that's the appropriate role that we'll take. Having said that, I think we have done a good job of bringing additional resources in. I would remind the committee members that we were strong supporters of the constitutional amendment to dedicate 40% of the motor vehicle sales tax to transit activities. Had it performed as anticipated at the time, that would have brought in excess of $100 million into our transit system. That's a meaningful addition to our transit activities. The final point I would make is that I think if you look at transit in a comparative sense rather than an absolute sense, we have fared as well as any other part of state government in terms of resources that have been allocated to us. I would put us up against education, higher education, corrections, human services, and the like. We have not done all we've wanted, but we have fared certainly adequately.
Thank you. Excellent question. We will transition now, members. We have folks from the Transit Partnership, as well as folks from the East Metro, as well as Margaret Donahoe from the Transportation Alliance. So all the folks who are going to share some thoughts with us, if you just come forward, maybe sit in this first row so we can get through your testimony as efficiently as possible. Our apologies that we're not leaving as much time as we had originally anticipated, so if you could maybe cut your comments in half or so, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Dave Van Hedda. I'm with Transit for Livable Communities. We facilitate a coalition called Transit Partnership here from Fresh Energy as one of the members, but we're a broad coalition, transit users, environment, faith, labor, et cetera. And we've been advocating for some time for a much more aggressive investment in transit and in the land use that supports it. And we appreciate your leadership in getting a good ways towards that goal last year. I have here today, and I'd like to pass around, a performance measurement report that we did at TLC along with MCA, because I think it really hits at the crux of some of these issues, which is how do we get the most from each dollar invested? And before I go into detail, I want to note just a couple things that we see as new in the Met Council's transportation policy plan. Number one, I believe it's on page 5 of Arlene McCarthy's presentation, is that we're going to, as a region, prioritize people movement. And that means something. That means prioritizing people movement over vehicle movement. If we don't have that second caveat, it doesn't mean anything. And so what that means is putting more people in buses, trains, carpools, biking, and walking. So just very quickly to give some wrap-up or some perspective in terms of how we're doing compared to other regions and maybe tell a quick story from Denver and Salt Lake, we're very far behind. And it's not just on the rail side. Equally important is the bus operating. While they expand their rail systems, and I'll give you the number in just a second, they are maintaining their bus system. So what we heard last Friday from Denver is 120 miles of rail by 2016. Salt Lake City is 70 miles in 7 years, and our regional plan is 70 miles in 12 years by 2020, if I got the numbers right. So more important than the numbers is the story. This is what the Denver Transit representative shared with the group. He said in that region, United Airlines contemplated where they would put their corporate headquarters, thousands of employees. Ultimately, they chose Chicago over Denver, and what they told the Denver public and elected officials was, we did that because Chicago had a mature public transit system. So that's why the investment part of transit is so important. Salt Lake made a similar decision. They said, as a state, not just as a region, that if we focus development and we build the transit to support it, we can save tens of billions of dollars over this kind of long-term horizon. And it also has the quality of life benefits of energy efficiency, serving the elderly, et cetera. So those are our main points. We are encouraged to see that the Met Council is moving in the direction of expanding transportation choices. obviously were concerned that the funding's not quite keeping up with the vision. By their own transportation policy plan document, our bus system shrank by 10% since 2002, and as of today, we don't know how we're going to keep from shrinking it going forward. So we have to grow both the bus, well, we have to, at a minimum, maintain the bus system. We have to continue our progress in expanding the rail system, and we really have to shoot for a goal higher than just doubling bus ridership, which would be a mode shift that you'll hear a lot more about Thursday when Congressman Oberstar is in this room. This is shifting the whole vision to have many more people, again, in buses, trains, biking, and walking. And you both need to make the transit investment, but you need to do the support of land use to get that kind of mode share and get the benefits that we think are so critical. So, again, thanks for your leadership. If you have any questions about our report, we're happy to talk in more detail. I would just close with one observation on the stimulus discussion, if I may. We watched this process pretty closely, and what we saw within the Met Council is that their process said that an issue was raised in the region about how to respond to the potential availability of additional federal funding for highway projects. So we amended the TPP. That may be appropriate. MnDOT last week circulated a document about the economic stimulus and called it the highway infrastructure. My point is simply that I think, as we heard today, those by default became the priority once again. Federal money available, let's rush for the highway money. We don't think that's appropriate on investment grounds, on quality of life grounds, on social benefit grounds. And if we're truly going to invest in this vision that gives more people choices about how to get to work and better connects our communities, we have to make clear our priorities. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Senator Dibble and members of the committee. My name is Ethan Fawley, and I work at Fresh Energy. I want to start by focusing on some of the comments that I've heard today about the vision from Commissioner McLaughlin. We heard that the vision needs to include an integrated approach for transitway development. It needs to be bold. It needs to be united. From Senator Saltzman, we heard that it needs to be balanced. From Ms. McCarthy, we heard that it needs to be strategic, and it needs to optimize our investments. What that tells me is that instead of looking back, we're now looking forward. We're not focusing on the previous era of highway expansion, but rather on a forward multimodal era. And when we're thinking about transitways and transit, we can't forget the bus system. And when we're thinking about growing our economy in this time of economic concern, we need to remember that 75% of transit users in the metropolitan region are using transit to get to work. Many of these transit users are transit dependent. If we start cutting back transit service, local bus service, are we impeding people's ability to get to work? And is that what we want to be doing in this time of economic hardship? So I encourage the legislature to move forward on this vision that we've heard so eloquently, and also to this session come up with a workable solution to ensure that we can maintain our existing transit system. Now, I just want to bring up one other point that Ms. McCarthy brought up earlier, and that's the congestion management plan that the Metropolitan Council will be doing, and then also that their reassessment with MnDOT of highway expansion projects and whether they need to be rescoped or rescaled. And my concern is that those are listed as highway projects. The congestion management plan is a highway-related project. Congestion management is a multimodal endeavor. We need to be thinking about the congestion management plan multimodally. We need to make sure that we're taking advantage of transitways, of bus service, of walking, biking, and telecommuting. We need to be very strategic. We need to be integrated. We need to be balanced. We need to be bold. We need to be united on this. So as the council moves forward on this very important endeavor, and I commend the council and MnDOT for taking these steps, but they need to make sure that plan is multimodal, and also that the process that creates that plan isn't just at the end that it's an open public process, but that it's transparent and open throughout. So with that, I thank you, and I look forward to the continued leadership of the legislature and Metropolitan Council and CTIB to ensure that we have a multimodal transportation system for the region.
Great.
Thank you. All right, so we have, I know we have for sure St. Paul and Woodbury and Ramsey County here. Anyone else kind of from the East Metro, please come forward. All right. All right.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Alan Lovejoy with the City of St. Paul. And with us today are also Clint Gridley of the City of Woodbury and Molly Grove from the St. Paul Chamber of Commerce. We are all representing the Eastern Transportation Alliance as well as our own specific constituencies. The Eastern Transportation Alliance first started discussing organizing about 5 years ago with the initial objective of sharing information about what individual organizations, businesses, elected officials had on their agenda for transportation improvements in the Metro East area. And then beyond that, to be more aggressive in specific project areas. Although a lot of discussion at the Eastern Transportation Alliance has been around transit, it has not been exclusively around transit, and we are very pleased that there are four Tier 1 bridges from last year's program that this body adopted that will be rebuilt in the Metro East area. Those are very significant improvements to our region. In addition, I'm immediate past chair of the Technical Advisory Committee to the Transportation Advisory Board and have worked now on three different transportation policy plans with the Metropolitan Council, and I can say that I think that this is by far the best in terms of moving us in new directions. And particularly, I would commend you to the financial management portion of the plan, which really tries to struggle with the ongoing issues, not only on the transit side, but on the highway side. And I think we're very concerned about ongoing things like pavement maintenance and dull things like that that are really, really significant in our region and our state, and are expensive and are, quite honestly, quite underfunded. So we continue to be very concerned about that, but pleased that that's in the Metropolitan Council's 2030 plan. We also want to thank the Metropolitan Council for changing the map on the corridors. Now, it's more than just the map. It's a recognition that there are a series of corridors in the region and that each corridor has a different mix of improvements and technologies that work best. And not that fixed rail is better than BRT or anything like that, but that each corridor needs needs these improvements. And this, I think, is a major step forward. In addition, there was scant mention of the Union Depot with respect to rail and high-speed rail in the Metro East area, and that language has been beefed up, and we also want to thank the council for that. I'd also commend you to take a look at, of all things, the appendix on transit. It is quite good and gives a much better sense, if we're going to add transit service in the region, how we go about doing that, what those priorities ought to be. I just want to mention a couple of things. Now here I'm sort of taking off my Eastern Transportation Alliance hat and putting on my City of St. Paul hat. That may be shared by others. But it does seem rather foolish to us that there is a growth in demand for transit at a time when we're cutting back on transit service. And this is not just an inner city issue. If you look at what's happened in the region, transit service to freestanding growth centers like Stillwater and White Bear Lake have been cut back substantially, almost eliminated. The transit service in northern Dakota County is really, really in dire straits. There is very, very little left in the region, and we understand about the funding issues on the one hand. On the other hand, the growing demand for transit at a time when we're cutting back service just doesn't make sense. In addition, we want to see a more aggressive partnership with the Metropolitan Council in terms of the Midwest High-Speed Rail Initiative. Quite honestly, the stuff that they're doing in Illinois and even in Wisconsin, there are some really exciting things going on, and we are not keeping pace. We are not being an active participant in that arena, and I believe that Congress will be acting in the next year or two independent of stimulus packages on high-speed rail in this country. Final thing that I want to mention is may seem a little bit more ethereal on its surface, but I think has just as much benefit as investing in transit and highways, and that is the link between higher density redevelopment and transit and transportation investments. What we need to do is take this map, this plan that the Met Council has put forward, and really push a much stronger emphasis on higher density development within these corridors. Quite honestly, if we are not going to build our way out of congestion either on the highway or the transit side, if we don't have a more sensible land use pattern in the region, in the state, that takes advantage of natural connections where people actually don't have to travel as much. And quite honestly, we are now in a situation where, because of high gas prices and congestion, the system is starting to pull apart. And the way that we heal that is not necessarily by making it easier for people to have 50-mile commutes, but by shortening those commutes. And I think I'll just leave it at that. There's a lot more that can be done there, and we look for the Metropolitan Council to be a leader in that arena. Clint?
Thank you. I'll just mention our committee time is up, so we need to be quick. We have another committee coming in here.
Chairman Dibble, I'll be very, very brief. I'm just here in support of the regional balance that has been talked about already.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Clint Gridley, City Administrator for the City of Woodbury. And just encouraging the committee to keep moving forward on things like the I-94 corridor study, which we share with St. Paul and the other East Metro cities. That glaring omission as part of the plan has been addressed, and we're looking forward to working with the Met Council and CTIB and the Department of Transportation on those plans.
And Mr. Chair and members, I'm Molly Grove, Vice President for Public Affairs at the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce, and I want to basically echo what my predecessors have said. We have long been involved in working for improved transit and transportation projects in the East Metro area. This plan, we think, the revised plan, certainly goes a long way towards meeting those needs. It's not perfect, but we do think that it lays the development for multiple corridors and the groundwork for how our region develops in the future. We're pleased to be working with Senator Saltzman, cities and counties and others as we develop further our transportation vision in the East Metro area. Thank you.
So I apologize, and I don't want to give you short shrift. We specifically invited folks from the East Metro because they've spent a lot of time working through the issues that came to light as this plan was being developed. So please let us know if you do have more critique. Call me, hand us something in writing. There is a 2010 update, and I know it's maybe got a specific focus, but it is an opportunity to work through the remainder of this year and into next if Met Council and legislature didn't quite get it right. So my apologies for the short trip, but thank you very much for coming forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we note Mr. Morris is in the audience with us as well.
So as they change, could I just say just thank you as well, Mr. Chair, that I think it's important to note that we have formed an East Metro Alliance that involves different counties so that we are trying to work as a region, and the ETA is now in its second year. And we've done a lot in 2 years, and we want to work with the entire metro region on our broader transportation plan.
So, Ms. Donahue, did you want to come forward?
We can send you something.
All right. Yeah, please do that. That's wonderful. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Members, any including comments?
Well, nope. Mr. Chair, I just wanted to clarify that it's not for the lack of the Eastern Transportation Lines or Senator Bonoff or I for not having more advocacy from the state for Midwest Interstate Passenger Rail Commission. In fact, we've included in the previous two bonding bills planning money for high-speed rail between the Union Depot, Minneapolis, and Chicago, and we've tried that consistently, yet it's been vetoed by the governor. So I just want to clarify that it's not for lack of trying on the legislature's behalf or anyone in this room, but we've been consistently blocked by the governor, and that was something that Chairman Oberstar, I'm sure, will address when he comes here on Thursday, because he has been frustrated by the governor's inability to support that and what it has meant for the lack of funding that we can now leverage that may come down as part of the federal stimulus package for high-speed rail.
Thank you. And we do have the passenger rail or the rail plan update being worked on right now by MnDOT, and I think Senator Bonoff did find out that there will be an opportunity for legislators to participate. So We'll be in touch with MnDOT to find out. I think there's something in our inbox, and we'll also be in touch to find out more about more opportunities to participate. Maybe we'll bring them forward and have a conversation in this committee on that.
Good.
With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.